If you're struggling in your career, business, or life, this podcast is for you. 9/11 survivor Ari Schoenbrunn shares inspiring interviews so you too can rise like a phoenix from the ashes to live your best life. Here's your host, Ari.
Welcome to Whispers and Bricks. My name is Ari Schoenbrunn. I'm your host. Today's episode is part two of Sabra Marcus' amazing escape from the Holocaust. Please welcome Sabra Marcus. She's going to give us the rest of her story. And Sabra, please continue.
I will continue from a point where my parents left Eugene after they got married. How they met, I don't know. All I remember from the stories is that my father, realizing that things are becoming very terrible all over Poland, the 30s brought a great deal. I can't think of another word. Ugly. Mm-hmm. Things were becoming ugly. People, ugly. Atmosphere, ugly. And my papa said, the only place to be safe, that has been its expression. If you steal something, his endearment name for me from Anna was Anushka. Anushka, if you, of course, I'm sure you'll never do it, but if you ever stole something, where would you hide it? I said, well, Papa, I don't know. I haven't experimented in this field. As he's laughing, he said, there's only one place to hide. Where, Papa? You go straight to the police station and find a corner someplace. I said, the police station? Why? He says, simple. They'll never look for it over there. I said, well, that kind of logic, okay, I get it, okay. I said, so what did you do? Mama and I packed our things. This is 1937. Mama and I packed our things and said, we're going to do what cousin, what's his name, did. What cousin, what's his name? 1880, 1850, that cousin. Remember him? No, who? Bromberg. Who's Bromberg? We're going to go and see what he did. So my mom and my father went to Warsaw. Didn't take them long. And they created business after business. Papa was a brilliant pastry chef. And people love sweets. And especially when the war is, there's a threat of war. But this point, at 1937, there was no war. Things were fine. They created a bakery. Then they created another bakery. Then they had one of the first sidewalk cafes besides the one on the inside, serving magnificent torts and beautiful pastries, making money and making more money and making more money. And then Hashem decided to be loving and kind to them and blessed them with the birth of two boys, twin boys. And soon after that, order came out. When the Nazis have attacked, the order came that all Jews are to be moved into a small section of Warsaw that would become the ghetto. Those that had money, those that were well-to-do, had a chance to survive. But the picture in the ghetto, which most people do not wish to speak of, But there are numerous pictures left that you can actually see. And what you will see are little boys and girls sitting on the ground with one or two of their siblings dead at their feet from starvation or disease or both. People walking by, ignoring them. Others are sitting with their hand out for a piece of bread and again, being ignored. Some had none to give and others just didn't care. They were concerned about themselves. My parents were in that ghetto. They were sent there. Nobody had a choice. They were lucky to know many good people that were selling my parents' belongings and selling their businesses and their home so that they could have some money for food. In the ghetto, to say life was hard is the most horrific understatement of this century. The only thing people didn't do is eat other human beings, but it wasn't far from getting to that point. My mother found out she was pregnant. That was one of the most horrific moments of her life. She kept saying, "We can't have a child now. We can't have a child in this place. We can't have a child in the ghetto. I have no breasts. I have no milk. I'm dry. This environment, this health, I can't." But her hell hadn't started yet. About 2 months, Mama never spoke much of the subject. She was in so much pain. I was born in July. 2 months prior to that, a truck came into the ghetto. Mama left the two little boys with her close neighbor, friend. The neighbor was there with her children. Several other ladies were there with their children. And they all were on the sidewalk, letting the children have some fresh air instead of being cooped up in some basement or some room that stinks of mold and mildew. Everybody was afraid. You could see the fear. You could smell the fear of each person. Mama went upstairs to get some water for the children. When she came downstairs, there were no children. A truck had come by. All the children were thrown on the truck. There were no infants anywhere. Whatever they found outside, whatever was hidden. Mama came down and she said, I kept asking, where are the children? Where are the children? I have brought water for all the children. No one responded because everyone was in hysterics, screaming and crying all around, all along the sidewalk. Finally, somebody was able to speak up and said, there are no children. They're on their way to a death camp. My mother's mind had snapped to a certain point. She was no longer the person my father knew. She was no longer that kind, loving, wonderful, brilliant, brilliant. Even when I knew my mother and she was broken to pieces, she was still brilliant. She stood there and she screamed. And she screamed. And they could not stop her from screaming until her voice was gone. Could not stop screaming. Meine Schäferle, my two little lambs, meine kleine Schäferle, my two little lambs. Wie sind meine Kinder? Where are my children? She never stopped saying, where are my children? And to add insult to injury, 2 months later, after they were murdered, I showed up. Why did I say insult to injury? God, she said, took away her two boys and punished her for something she doesn't know what she might have done. Punished her by giving her a girl. Not a little girl to replace the beautiful two boys that were taken, but a girl. Who needs a girl? They took two of my boys. My papa sent a little boy. The place wasn't tight shut as yet. You could send somebody and little boys, pardon me. Little boys were able to sneak out somehow between the barracks, somehow between, they were able to go through old buildings, broken buildings, bombed buildings. Papa said, buy me a tub to wash clothing in. Mr. Marcus, why do you need a tub? I need it as a bed for my little girl, and I need it as a tub to wash her, the little child, and for washing the clothes, but I also needed for her to, for a place to sleep in. He gave him money to bribe. He says, if you need to, steal one, but don't come back without. The little boy, sure enough, came back with a small tub. And my father also had sent another boy at the same time to buy a large bottle of alcohol. Mr. Marcus, why do you need a bottle of alcohol? So I can pour it inside and burn it and purify it so that it doesn't hurt my beautiful little girl. Papa said, if they hear her cry, she'll be dead immediately. Come, boys, let's see how we can save this child. They start searching buildings and found one with a basement. And then they found a way to remove a trapdoor to go into a sub-basement where the sewers were flowing. And that's where Papa had set up camp. This is where he and his little girl are going to live. This is where he and his little girl and Mama, if we can drag her down there, that's where they're going to live. And when they need to be on top to be visible so they didn't escape, he left the little boys down there with long sticks to fight off the rats so I wouldn't be eaten. And this had gone on and on and on. And every now and again, one of his Polish friends, dressed in some very severe, serious uniform, would show up and then beat my father a few times for good measure and hand him over a small bag of diamonds or gold. The profits from selling some of Papa's property. Anyone, let me teach you, all you wonderful people listening, let me teach you. If God forbid, war ever comes to our shores, remember, do not collect money. Money is useless. Money is what you burn to warm up your feet. The only thing that's of any value are diamonds and gold. Nothing else. Of course, a loaf of bread. But it might cost you a 5-carat diamond. You still need the diamonds. Yes. Did you want to say something to me?
No.
No? Okay. So Papa received every few weeks, some Polacks would come, beat him up a little bit. Nothing drastic, nothing terrible. Just for show. And put stuff in his pocket, as they were so-called fighting. And he'd use terrible language that only Nazis would. But they had to do that. Because otherwise, why would that Polak be there? And why is it, you almost tripped me. Watch where you're going. Papa was sniffing around. Oh, there's always a bad apple. Always a bad apple someplace in that barrel. You just have to dive deep enough, far enough, and search. And you'll find that. After months and months and months and months, many months, the situation and the starvation in the camp was getting worse continuously. Every time Papa had food, he would hide some of it under his coat. And he'd go to some of the children sitting on the sidewalk with their feet in the gutter. You saw the starvation. Their eyes were as big as their face. And he'd say, come with me. Some of the kids would follow him. He'd go into a hallway. He would go into a stairwell of any of the buildings and break up a loaf of bread, giving everyone a chunk and say, don't go out. Eat all of it. We have later. I said, no. Eat all of it now, because if someone touches you and finds it, they will eat it and beat you up. Eat all of it now. And here is a bottle. Drink as much as you can. Each one, drink as much as you can. I'd like to think that having done that so many times, that entire length of time that they were there, they were there for 2 years, maybe more. Hopefully that helped some of these children survive. I pray to God. I pray that some of them survive and bless a man that came and gave them food, bread and water every so often. While we're still in that horrible, hellhole Warsaw ghetto, every morning you sew carts. Every morning you sew carts. Go through the ghetto, go through the streets where they picked up corpse after corpse after corpse. From in front of the building, right in the main street as I walked across the street and dropped dead. On the sidewalks, everywhere you looked, there were corpses. And every morning, Jews with buggies, Jews with carts, came to collect them. People say things about hell. I'm sure they understand what they think they're saying. But I promise you, they do not. They don't have a clue what hell is. Hell is the Warsaw Ghetto with hundreds of little children and adults of all ages dropping dead from sheer starvation and some from disease. And to them, if you ask them, they would tell you it was a merciful day. They stopped suffering. They stopped suffering, you understand? I know what that means. I didn't know I was going to know what that means. I found out later, a few years later. Amen.
Let me just say we're listening here to Sabra Marcus as she tells her incredible story of her life in the Warsaw Ghetto. This is the end of part two. Part three will be coming within the next few days. We'll be getting to part three. You've been listening to Whispers and Bricks, part two of Sabra Marcus' amazing story of her escape from the Holocaust. Stay tuned for part three coming soon. And until then, listen to the whispers, avoid the bricks, and never ever give up on your dreams. Bye for now.
So that's it for today's episode of Whispers and Bricks. Head on over to iTunes and subscribe to the show. One lucky listener every single week that posts a review on iTunes will win a chance in the grand prize drawing to win a $25,000 private VIP day with Ari himself. Be sure to head on over to whispersandbrickspodcast.com and pick up a free copy of Ari's gift and join us on the next episode.